Welcome to Pushback, a social justice podcast produced and distributed by Philadelphia Magazine and Word Radio.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for downloading Pushback. This is Flood the Drummer.
And this is Malcolm Burnley.
And today we're going to talk about music, particularly social conscious music, message music, protest music, whatever you call it. But it's going to be about where black music and social justice, social responsibility meet at the intersection. That's a pretty good way of saying it, right, Malcolm?
Yeah. And I mean, I think when people think about either protest music or message music, I think a very different imagery comes to mind. I mean, we just had the 50th anniversary of the Monterey Music Festival, and I think in 2 years it'll be Woodstock. A lot of people think of that era, kind of like late 60s. A lot of people go all the way back to, slave songs. People think of NWA. I mean, I just went on Wikipedia and looked up protest songs in the United States, and I got to say, the list is pretty weak in terms of as you go on in the generations. Obviously, this is Wikipedia, but man, they listed like Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA as a protest song. I was like...
I think it does muddy the water when you start talking about what is protest music, what people are protesting. Because again, if you're a protester and you're protesting abortion rights and you have a song about whales, that might be protest music, right? So I think it's all about it. I try to maybe root it and say like justice music. So when I think about it, I think about the first thing that comes to mind is the slave music, what people sung during the slave rebellion, wade in the water. Like that was coded music, told people that it's not safe to run now, so wait, and, you know, wade in the water, and then when it's safe, then we'll make the run. Steal away, you know, another slave song or spiritual that was a code for to escape to freedom. So that was all about liberty and freedom and justice. And so, I mean, nothing is more about civil rights than those three, right?
Right. No, I mean, I think it's interesting. And I mean, just fast forward to today, like, you know, people have talked about some of Kendrick Lamar's music in terms of being protest or message music. But I also feel like, you know, I don't know if this is true compared to previous generations, but I feel like there's a lot more mainstream artists trying to, maybe I shouldn't use the word co-opt it, but, you know.
No,
like,
I think sometimes that's correct.
Yeah.
It's what the difference is, at least as it looks now, is back in the 60s, 50s and 60s is when protest music was probably at its peak. But again, I think it started in the 18th, 19th century. But nonetheless, I think back then there were artists like the Last Poets and, you know, Gil Scott Heron, who were committed to that genre of music. Whereas now it's people who do a type of music who may bring that in on the track to kind of just diversify the portfolio or diversify right. what they're presenting.
Man, that bothers me.
Yeah, I think you have to look at the backstory of the artist presenting that. Right. So sometimes the artist is a philanthropist. And that's kind of what informs their music. So their library may not be socially conscious, but they themselves are socially conscious. It doesn't translate into the music, maybe. So I think in that context, you have to separate the music from the person. But anyway, I think that it's a genre that could be profitable. It proved profitable for people like Marvin Gaye and Gil Scott Heron. But it doesn't seem as though it has the same level of desirability now.
So when I think about a protest or message song, the first thing I think about is Jimi Hendrix when he played the Star Spangled Banner. It's just like this famous iconic video. That's the first one that I think of. Is there one that like you go to when you think of, or is it NWA? Like
when I just think of message music.
Yeah,
I think it's Wade in the Water is the first one. Then I think of the Temptations' Message from a Black Man. I think about the Temptations' Run Charlie Run. I talked about this on the radio a few weeks ago. Run Charlie Run, the Temptations did in 71 or 72. It was so controversial that Motown almost didn't produce it. It's a song about white flight, about white people leaving Detroit because the black people are coming. And the chorus is literally Run Charlie Run. Look, the niggers are coming. The niggers are coming. And I don't think you can get any more controversial than that. And again, speaking directly to an issue about white flight and not wanting to stay and build camaraderie and unity with your neighbors. But again, the Temptations don't get the credit for being the catalyst to bring Motown from an apolitical organization to an overt political organization. That goes to Marvin Gaye. Mm-hmm. But I think people...
You can read more about that on TechBook Online,
by the way. That was a shameless plug. But no, I do think that every artist has maybe had their one-offs. I don't think the Temptations would be considered one-offs. I also don't think that they were justice singers.
Right.
I think they just kind of... there was a period where you could not ignore what was happening in the country, and so they had to respond to it. And I think that's where we're at today.
Yeah, and so specifically, you know, just to kind of transition into the conversation we're going to have today, I mean, a lot, hip-hop music has both developed, and I mean, it's kind of inseparable from protests, I would say, and from socially conscious music. I mean, I feel like...
hip-hop?
Since that, yeah. Since
today?
Since the 80s. I mean, the rise of hip-hop, I feel like, came about in part, you know, protesting Reagan-era policies.
Yeah.
You know, and there's been artists over time from, I've already mentioned, N.W.A. to KRS-One.
Or even not a protest if people don't... Because I wouldn't consider it a protest, but I would consider it a cultural revolution. Like, that they were pushing back against what society told them they could say, what they told them they could do. I think Fuck the Police was, like, kind of breaking the mold, right?
Yeah, yeah, oh, absolutely.
Before
yeah.
then, who would ever put that on ink or on disc and let people hear that?
So we have Arson on today, who's a Philadelphia-based rapper, who's been rapping for a long time in the city as well as outside. And 29 years old, recent single came out, For the Camera, came out in early 2017. It's a particularly socially conscious song compared to some of his other music. So we want to get into talking to him about the inspiration behind that. Also had a really powerful video attached to that. And Arson's also not just in his music, but has been very socially conscious for a number of years, starting a nonprofit called DB4, which deals with inner city violence in Philadelphia, and just has a number of interesting things to say on that front.
Welcome to the show, Arson.
Yeah, we got what's up, y'all.
So, sir, in your newest video, For the Cameras, it opens up with some montages to what's happening in the news, Black Lives Matter and violence, right? But before we go too deep in the video, there's one of the lyrics that you say, you call yourself a product of the marches, right? Mm-hmm. And that stuck out to me. And I think that's where we should start, because I think that probably informs who you are and why you do what you do. So what do you mean when you say you're a product of the marches?
Well, coming up, I'm from West Philly. Area called the Black Bottom, and the Black Bottom originally back in the day, my grandfather moved here. My grandfather was Italian. He looked white, but he was black, you know. He was black and Italian, and it was a lot of racism going on at the time, a lot of what they call white flight, a lot of Caucasian people was leaving the area, and a lot of minority people started to move in. So growing up, my mother always played which I would call protest music, you know, Marvin Gaye. And growing up listening to that, even younger artists at the time, you know, Michael Jackson, just being a part of that whole movement, you know, and seeing everything that was going on as a kid, my mom teaching me about the Black Panthers or teaching me about our culture.
Was your mother a part of any of these movements, or she just thought it was important for you to know about it?
My mom was indirectly part of it.
What does that mean?
She personally knew the person that Martin Luther King came to see down my neighborhood.
Okay.
In West Philadelphia, down the bottom. He came.
And that was at 40th and Lancaster.
She lived on 38th and Folsom Street.
No, I'm talking about when he came to Philly.
Oh, he stopped at 40th and Lancaster, but his destination was 38th and Folsom.
Oh, okay.
Which is like one of the main streets around there. So she personally knew that person, and they went to school together. So she was indirectly she was a part of it, but not involved like that. So she would just educate me on a lot of things, and I would see a lot of the marches growing up. And as a kid, you know, when I was a teenager, I started doing my own little marches against violence. When I was 19, I did an event. I had Jenny Blackwell come down at the time.
Michael and that's Nutter. A city council person of West Philly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the mayor, Michael Nutter, wasn't the mayor at the time. He was running to be the mayor.
Okay. Well, John Street was the mayor.
Yeah, John Street was the mayor, and he was a part of the march. It was called The Bottom United. You could Google it.
Nice.
So that was
me. Was your first?
That was my first time actually going out of my way to do something specifically for the community. You know, at 19 years old, and I wanted to start a movement. So at that time, I wanted to unite what I knew best, which was my neighborhood. I wanted to start in my backyard. So I united my neighborhood. My neighborhood was always known for violence, and you don't want to go down the bottom. It's crazy down there. So I wanted to kind of unite everybody. You know, everybody was killing each other on different blocks. So it was called the Bottom United. So that was my first march in my neighborhood, which...
How many people turned out?
At that event, we had 300 people.
Nice.
300 people. Yeah, it was real good. We had food and everything. The kids came out. So from then, you know, I just wanted to start to implement everything that was taught to me as a kid, not mm-hmm. just through music, but through my lifestyle. You know, we talked about the overall brand of an artist, and my overall brand is more than just music. You know, like you said, I do stuff in the community. You know, I went to school. I got my master's in human service. I feel like to be the best at anything, you need to have the proper tools. So to be the best artist, if I'm going to be talking about certain things, I need to know what I'm talking about. I need to know what I'm talking about from a street perspective, but also need to know what I'm addressing. And then address those things that really matter, you need some type of education. So I tried to have a balance of both. So that's what I mean when I said I'm a product of the marches. You know, I'm a product of the 80s. Mm. You know, crack and hip-hop kind of raised me.
Mm.
Crack and hip-hop raised me. You know, the effects that crack had on the community, you know, with my own family, with my family dying, with people robbing and stealing, that was a part of my development, my childhood development. First time I seen somebody get killed, I was 11 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, I seen them get shot in the face.
Wow.
And it's certain things your mom can't save you from.
Yeah.
And a lot of that stuff dealt with the impact of crack in the 80s into the 90s when I was growing up. So I always want to show people being a product in your environment always got to be a negative product. It can be a positive product.
It's interesting because that means, like, in a way, your entire brand is pushing back on society and what they told you a person like you from that neighborhood could come from, right?
Exactly. Even my name, a lot of people don't know this. It's in my bio, but a lot of people don't ask. They hear my name, Arson. They're like, oh, fire, I get it, you hot. But it's Arson, A-R-S-I-N.
Mm.
It used to be S-O-N, but I decided, I said, you know, what's one of the things that we deal with as humans? It's sin.
Mm.
It's balance. It's right or wrong. And that type of mindset, looking in my community, looking at everything around me, was very sinful. So it was like, you know, when you say it, it's Arson, but it's kind of like our sin. You know what I mean? Like our sin is something that we struggle with internally and externally. So I wanted to bring that into my name because I already had Arson. So I wanted to bring that into my name to kind of make it more of what I stood for. Mm-hmm. You know, I stood for the balance. I stood for the right and wrong. I stood for the temptation, mm-hmm. the struggle, the pressure that we deal with in our community.
So it sounds like you drew a lot of inspiration from your neighborhood where you grew up. I'm not from Philly originally. I'd actually never heard of Da Bottom before.
Yeah, I'm putting it on the map. It was just like Compton. A lot of people hear about Compton to NWA.
Yeah, so tell me, do you have any idea, first of all, where the name came from? Do you know?
Come from the Black Bottom.
Okay.
When the Renaissance happened and all the black people were moving up north, Philadelphia, of course, was one of them. And that specific neighborhood, Mantua, was the first suburb of Philadelphia. Back when, you know, Independence, when City Hall was down Fifth Street, it was the first suburb. So black people started to move into the community. And like I said, a lot of the people that was here moved out. So they called it the Black Bottom. Mm. And we have Black Bottom picnics every year since then. And they kind of dropped the black and just the bottom. And then it got changed from the T-H-E to right, D-A. Right. So, yeah, that's how we got the name.
Who's been mentoring you in the knowledge process from that march at 19 to what you're doing with Drexel? I mean, I know you talk about your mother, but being directly influenced, is that your mentor or was there somebody more directly involved in social justice that kind of took you under their wing and helped you get these things executed?
Gene Robinson. No one knows who that is.
Mm-hmm. But put him on the map.
Gene Robinson is just, I mean, what I'm about to say to y'all is pieces. It's mm-hmm. not one person.
Okay.
Gene Robinson is a heroin addict.
Mm-hmm.
Who used to be a pimp back in the day.
Mm.
He went to the war. You know, every now and then, you know, I didn't grow up with a father, so every now and then, you know, he'll be out on the corner and he'll drop a jewel on me.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers, different mm-hmm. teachers in school would drop jewels on me.
Mm-hmm.
Tupac, Bone Thugs and Harmony, Nas. I know it sounds kind of like a lot of people say that, but listen, when I was 12 years old, I mean, when I first started listening to rap, I found cassettes on the ground, and Brand Nubians was a cassette. Mm. And I listened to Brand Nubians back to back to back. Yeah. Y'all know Brand Nubians, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Brand Nubians has a lot of conscious type mm-hmm. music. So that was my first hip hop artist I listened to. So these were my mentors. I mean, really, be honest with you, other than a couple people in the neighborhood that had a couple things to say, I was on my own.
Okay.
I sat in my room and I listened to them. I didn't know these guys from a can of paint. I didn't even know that other people listened to these people. Like, now that I'm older, everybody like, oh, I grew up being a Pac fan. At the time, people was worried about Pokemon cards, beepers, Gigapets. I'm the only one at 11 and 12 years old listening to stuff, you know, that's going on and listening to it. They was like my big brothers. They was like, you know, my mentors. They was telling me what was going on. They was giving me perspectives on things I could relate to. Mm-hmm. And that's how I said, damn, this is what I want to do.
Mm.
You know, I want to do this.
Mm. What about like today in terms of either local or, you know, nationally? Are there any artists who either inspire you, particularly thinking about socially conscious music, like, or who you think have a message that, like, say Tupac was for you?
I like Kendrick Lamar mm-hmm. a lot. I feel that he does something similar in the sense of his direction. I feel like he just honest with himself. That's one current artist. It's really not that many mainstream artists, you know. It's a lot of underground people like Hopskin, you know.
I like
him a lot because, like, these are people who don't care. Tech N9ne,
right?
You know, these are people who don't care. They don't have a mainstream agenda. They don't care. They do what they want. They do what they feel.
Do you have
they
a mainstream agenda, or do you classify yourself as an underground artist?
I mean, I feel like I'm just a worldwide artist. I just feel like I don't, you know, classify. I feel like my music is. You can, like, my music sell all over the world.
But you're not buying into mainstream culture.
I'm not buying into nothing. I'm not buying into, you know, mainstream agendas. I'm not buying into rap battle stuff. I'm not buying into nothing.
Do you get challenged to rap battles? I would
imagine. I never get challenged. No? Like, I used to battle back in the day.
I saw there's some videos, right?
Yeah, I used to. I never lost a battle. I used to chew people's head off. For real, that's really how I got my initial name in battles. They'd be like, oh, that's fire. That's fire. And I went home, eighth grade, like, looking up things. Synonyms and stuff, like, what's fire? Damn, arson, you know what I mean?
That's a good name.
I'll be asking people, like, I don't know why nobody come at me.
It's interesting because I feel like recently within, like, Philly rap, a lot of what I've heard is all these beefs. Like, I feel like usually when I hear about Philly rap, and it's usually Meek Mill, but, like, and not to knock Meek Mill, like, I like his music, but there's been so many of that, and it's, like, negative.
Yo, back in the 10 years ago, it was crazy.
It was even worse, right?
I know. It was ridiculous out here.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I just stayed away from it. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it was stupid at the end of the day. It wasn't really about hip hop. I mean, people were talking about killing each other, and people was actually shooting at each other.
I was just going to ask you, did these rap battles lead to violence?
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. So, it wasn't really too much hip hop for me. I mean, it was fun watching it on YouTube, but it was just kind of like, it got to a point where it was like, it wasn't doing nothing for us. You know what I mean? It wasn't doing nothing but making us just look bad at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
It was just kind of getting stupid. So I never really got involved in it.
Mm. Yeah. I'm going to go back to the video now for the camera.
Yeah.
Right? You say that in the hook, you say they don't care about us, and you use the word they a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Who are they? Who are the they you're talking about?
Well, when I'm talking about, you know, the powers that be, whether it's the authorities, people that have power over the things, whether it's Congress, whether it's the police, the people who can bend the rules, you know, in our society and in our country.
But your lyric is, they don't care about us. That's how you really feel?
Yeah, that's how I feel. I feel like they care about us. I feel like they don't. You know, like, I just feel like they don't, because it's never, when things are addressed for us, it's always because we had to make some noise about it. Like, why we got to make noise about it? You know, why can't it just be a situation where you suggest things for us? You suggest...
Just do the right thing.
You suggest affordable health care, because common sense tells you, if you have a low-income families in America, how are they going to pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we have to push the issue? Why do we have to protest after a person gets killed, you know, for you to even look into the case, or for you to... oh, yeah, we handling it. Oh, the person is being is suspended. Mm-hmm. But what happened if we didn't?
Right.
So it's like, you don't care. Like, even going back to situations like, you know, Katrina. Mm-hmm. Come on. You know what I mean? Like, come on. Mm-hmm. Like, all of that had to happen.
So when Kanye said, you know, George Bush doesn't care about black people, did you connect with that? Like,
I feel like, yes, because, and I feel like part of it is a lot of those people, they don't understand. They're not culturally competent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't understand. You know, so it's kind of like, they always think we complain. Oh, you just complain. It's all right. Work hard. You know, work hard. This American dream. We all had to work hard. Mm-hmm. It's okay to work hard, but it's like you telling me to build a house. You got all the tools. You got the blueprint. You got everything you need, and you give me a hammer and say, go ahead. I'm like, where the bricks at? Well, figure it out. But this person over here got all of that, you know. And I always tell people about privilege, you know what I mean? And it's not that the person with all the tools is privileged. That's what they're supposed to have. It's the people that don't have the tools that's not
that disadvantage.
The disadvantage. You
so
see
we
what
make
saying?
Privileged out to be a bad thing. Everybody should be privileged.
Everybody
right?
should be privileged. Right. You see what I'm saying? So
is that how you feel, Malcolm?
So what happens is in our community, we start to resent privileged people. Mm-hmm. And it's not nothing wrong with having a good education or, you know, growing up like this. It's just that we start to resent it because we don't have it. So that's where the disconnect comes in. Mm-hmm. I'm not good as you. Mm-hmm. And that's the psychological collective thing that's presented. So that's what I mean when they don't really care. You know
is
what
is
I mean?
Part of your job or part of your agenda at the end of the day to give people privilege?
I mean, yeah. A lot of things I talk about in my music, you know, even in my whole movement, is to bring resources. My nonprofit bring resources. Okay. I like to teach people how to fish, you know. Mm-hmm. My music, I have had people say, Lynn, listen, this song, I was about to end my life. This song was right on time. You know, or I hear someone say, you know, I was in an abusive relationship. You know, this song really let it go. You know, or like Reflection, for example, the song in the video, my friend got killed and I was deciding if I wanted to do something back. You know, I had a person, literally, kids I was working with at 10th and Cumberland in North Philly, literally. There's an artist, his name Mike Raw. You know, he told me, you know, he said, listen, his friend got killed in the program. Mm-hmm. I met his friend got killed. He literally said, listen, that video was me that day. He said, I was loaded up, ready to go. I was going to do it. He said, but when I seen that you made the decision in the video to not to, you know, like that really spoke to me. He an artist, so for him, he just took it out in his music. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that's what I wanted to do back when I was listening to music. You know, they stopped me from doing a lot of things to myself and other people.
Yeah, I feel like it's interesting to hear you say that because I feel like so many people have maybe not even necessarily blamed exclusively hip-hop music, but a lot of people have complained about it in the past that it's accentuated or like contributed to violence,
glorified
right?
it
yeah glorified that's a good Man, word but also on the flip side right like a lot of people haven't given enough credit to not only artists like you but also artists who've had a different message or even if it's not a direct message of like anti-violence just something that's steered people away too. Mm-hmm. It's probably both sides right I mean hip hop maybe has contributed in some ways, but has also helped in other ways to stem violence.
Hip hop is a culture. It's just a message. And listen, this world is violent. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about all the wars from the beginning. I mean, back when we had spears in our hand, back when it was about resources, back to the most primal thing. Like, is violence. Like Hollywood, we don't complain about Arnold Schwarzenegger and them.
You think hip hop is the scapegoat? Is the scapegoat for the violence?
Yeah, because. Look who it's coming from. It's coming from somebody that's like, we tired of hearing about
it. It's coming from the they.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we tired of hearing about it. Like, it's like, all y'all want to listen, this is our life. Like, you know, what's the difference? You go over there and bomb another country because you want they owe you. I got friends who rap that talk all murder. I don't co-sign it, but I understand it. Because listen, at some point in my lives when my friend, I had 45 friends get killed since I was 15. 45 from gun violence. Wow. there's a lot of times I want to just be on some murder stuff. Mm-hmm. So when the person rapping about it, I just look at it like, oh, they're at that stage in their life that I was. Mm-hmm. I don't judge them. You know what I mean?
Do you also use this music to deal with the grief, or is there another process you have for grief?
Of course, man. I mean, reflection, literally, I wrote that day. You know what I mean?
When the person died?
I had to.
Wow.
I mean, you look at some of my videos, I could point to you people who ain't even here no more.
Wow.
From last year, standing right next to me. You know what I mean?
That's deep.
I had to. You know, we don't teach mental health maintenance in our community. Mm-hmm. We don't ever teach health. Mm-hmm. You know, especially men, we don't go to doctors for nothing, let alone mental health. Mm-hmm. We don't have therapists. We all think, oh, you crazy if you got a therapist. No. Just like you brush your teeth, you wash your body every day, you need to clean your mind and rejuvenate your spirit every day. We don't teach that. We come up with other ways to deal with it. Mm-hmm. We come up, our emotions turn aggressive. We want to hurt somebody. You know, a lot of the kids I work with just hype for nothing. Mm-hmm. They just want to catch some wreck. But if you dig deeper into it, you find out that it's real life stuff going on. They just can't let it out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I was the same way. You know, I used to do a lot of the crazy stuff too. I just made the decision not to once I seen my friends getting killed. Mm.
So at what point, you were obviously exposed to a lot of this at a young age, and then you were also always interested in music at a young age, but then you started this nonprofit, DB4, which stands for the bottom four, right? Mm-hmm. At what point did you, I guess, make that other step? Like, why was that important to you to create an organization specifically for anti-violence, right?
And youth, exactly.
And youth, yeah.
Well, it all started when I was 13. I was in a program called Youth Works. I had a decision to work as an intern. You could work at the bike shop or you could work at Children's Hospital. Hmm. So I decided to work at Children's Hospital. It was 12 of us. I'm the only person out of that group who still works in the field. What I realized it did for me, it gave me the resources I need to be successful. Simple things, how to dress for an interview, you know, how to speak properly, you know, professionalism, marketing yourself. So I went to school. I got my master's degree. I learned more. So I said, Dad, I want to take this knowledge. I want to give it back. So I started a nonprofit because I had resources at this point for working in the field for 14 years. I knew people, so I knew I could get money, especially Drexel. Drexel want my community. I'm going to get some money out of them. You know what I mean? To give back to the community. So they funded, you know, free summer camps, untraditional sports, life skills programming. I wanted to give youth, because listen, it all starts, you got to catch people when they growing up. That's, you got to catch them between 10 and 15, because at the 15, they pretty much gone if they're going to be gone. Right. So my whole thing was, I knew how big of an effect it had on me, so I wanted to do the same thing. And just like people in music who talk about whatever they talk about, say they talking about killing people or living life or being a boss or whatever, you want to check them. You want to G-check them. You want to see that they really living that life. So there's no way in the world I can be rapping about certain things, mm-hmm. and then outside of it, I ain't doing it. You know, I do the work. You know, I do what I say I do. And that's why I decided to go back, because I had the tools, the resources, and what better place to start with your own community.
How do these young people respond if you've ever told them about you losing 45 of your friends? I mean, do you use that as a
sometimes? Yeah, I mean, see, in my neighborhood, a lot of the people know me already.
Okay,
so they already know.
Okay,
what it is.
But so a lot of them knew the people who died.
Yeah, okay. So they already know me. Like, you know, I'm like, you know, it's funny, when I was young, it was like I was the weird, quiet one. Mm-hmm. Now I'm like, oh, you representative. But now I go outside my neighborhood, I go into other parts of the city, I do the conferences across the country, and I went to LA and I did a whole conference on Philadelphia and the stuff we're talking about now. It was called the N2 Thinking Conference. So when I go to other places, they don't know me. So I have to, and then sometimes I go in a suit or dressed up, so I just look, you know. Then sometimes people say I got that face where you just don't even, and that demeanor where you don't even think, you know. So I have to let them know. Like, I tell them situations, mm-hmm. and they be like, damn.
How do you describe Philadelphia to people who've never been here?
First of all, I mean, it depends. When I go to another city, if I'm going to an urban area, it's certain transferable cultural things they know about.
Right. Dirty streets.
Yeah, dirty streets, you know, lack of this. Same thing. But some of these conferences be privileged people, you know, privileged people. So you're not just telling about your city. You're telling them about things that they don't even really understand. Mm-hmm. And they're just so interested. Like, oh, my God, really? that's just terrible. Mm. And I'm like, I didn't come here for you to have pity on me. Mm. I'm just letting you know what's going on.
You know, wrapping up, you know, what's next for you, right? I mean, should we expect more movement songs or more socially conscious songs like this? Are you playing around the city anytime soon this summer? Or I know you just did the Word Speaks event on black music. So what's going to be next for you?
Well, I have a lot of shows coming up. I have one in North Carolina, one in Tampa. I'm setting up one in L.A. now.
Okay.
I have one. I usually do While I Welcome to America.
Okay.
At 4th of July in Philly. Mm-hmm. So I plan on doing that this year.
Nice.
I'm working on my next album. I got a single out right now. Well, it's about to come out, another single. It's really not on the lines of For the Camera, but my album that I'm working on is called Want. Mm-hmm. It's going to be out in 2018, and it just talks about temptation, you know, inner temptation, how people want. My whole thing right now is dealing with the way society is with social media, instant gratification, power. People wanting to be something they're not internally. Mm-hmm. And then externally, they want the things, and they want to identify with things that's materialistic. But when those materialistic things perish, they perish. Mm-hmm. So my album is called Want. It has a lot of fun songs on there. For the Camera is on there.
Okay.
It has a social context because it's talking about what I just said.
Okay.
But I'm also planning on doing a short film with it, a free short film that I'm gonna put on YouTube. It's called Shall Not Want, where it talks about a person dealing with the things I just talked about, and then the album being the soundtrack.
Any chance you'll run for office anytime soon?
No. People always ask me that.
No, not a shot.
Somebody tried to get me to run for
Obama. Yeah. Man. Oh, man.
You talk good. You got connections. Come on, man.
People always want me to run for something. Somebody tried to get me to run for state rep like 3 years ago. It's like, you could do it. I said, man, I appreciate it.
Is it something you will consider in the future or just not at all?
It's just not.
So For the Camera, also, if people haven't seen it yet, you know, we've been talking a little bit about the lyrics, but you got to see the video because the video's got a lot of really powerful imagery in it.
Yeah, I didn't even promote the song heavy until I did the video because I knew what my vision was. I was like, this video is going to push.
And you
the
edited
song.
This video.
Yeah, I was shot. Yeah, I saw that. me and Quintessa, we work with Extinguish Entertainment. We shot it.
Okay.
And I edited it, you know, so I wanted to make sure every scene, you know, all the audio, you know, took me 12 hours to edit, but you know.
So tell people who are just listening now, who are going to check it out later, some of what's in it. Just like describe a little bit about what are some of the imagery and I guess like, you know, audible things that you bring into this.
First off, it's arson for those who's listening. The video is called For the Camera. You can watch it on YouTube. It's just showing, you know, our imagery is showing me with a tank behind me, an army tank. You know, I want to give that militant vibe that Public Enemy gave, you know. Fight the Power was kind of my mindset thinking of it. So you see a tank in there, you know, you see white, black people protesting together. You see a lot of young minority kids having fun. That was one of the agendas of the song, was to come up with something serious but fun, because you want the kids to be a part of it. And behind the kids and in front of the kids, you see a casket, because I wanted to show that a lot of the young black kids are getting murdered. You see pictures of a whole bunch of pictures of people as cutaways and B-roll. These are all people who lost their lives to violence. You see police in the video. You see police talking to people. You see police beating on people. You see, you know, people rioting. You see everything that a young minority individual sees growing up.
Yeah.
You see it. You know, you see me handcuffed and you
bleeding.
See me bleeding,
right?
Handcuffed, and you see me with like a kind of like
implying that the cops tied too tough,
too tight, exactly, because that's what happens.
Right.
You see me isolated, you know, because of what I have to say. You see cameras on me because they want to study me, they want to record what I'm saying, they want to contain me. That was part of the concept too. And I always tell people it's about social media too. You see Snapchat, Facebook logos that the kids is holding up as picket signs, because you got to remember, perception is everything. You know, everything they see on social media, a lot of that stuff is edited, misconstrued. People live their lives through social media. They'll post. I know people, when we did that Trayvon March, I know people who got dressed up, put a hoodie on, got some Skittles, took a picture and went right back in the house. Social media.
Posing for the cameras.
For the camera.
Right, they want to be a part of it. Right?
Exactly.
Part of a movement.
When all these videos of people getting beat by cops, and that's being recorded, you know, a lot of the people, the moves people are making is just for the camera. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, CNN and Fox is, you know, they sell stories. They don't sell truth. They sell stories.
You know, the big fan of the media?
Man, listen, who knows what's true? I mean, come on, let's be honest. You can feed me whatever you want. You got the power to. Viacom, come on. they all split up. Come on, but Viacom is in control. So
Comcast and Viacom.
Viacom, but at the end of the day, whatever their job is to sell, they ain't to tell the truth. There's a lot of things I've seen. Listen, I've been interviewed. No offense to NBC or none of the local stations, but I've been interviewed about a situation and told the truth, and I watched the news later. I ain't on it.
They're like, this guy's telling the truth.
This nigga, I don't want no problems. See, they
you
avoid
talk too good. You
they
talk too good.
They avoid problems.
Yeah,
you know.
No. I mean, the media here is shitty, and I think we could do a whole podcast of just how shitty the media is and how much context they leave out of stuff. And
exactly. So you can't trust it. You know, you can't trust it.
So you guys should definitely check out the video for the camera. It's on YouTube, and there's more than enough videos of him on arsonmovement.com, which is the official website. And you should follow him on Twitter, arson215, and that same address is on Snapchat. And of course, we've been calling him Arson this entire podcast, but his birth name is Vente Clemens, from West Philadelphia, graduate of University City High School, my alum. Unfortunately, the school isn't there anymore. But anyway, stay connected with Arson on Twitter, on Snapchat. I'm sure you'll be hearing more from him. Arson, thanks so much for joining Pushback.
Thank y'all for letting me come through.
Absolutely.
Fire!
So Malcolm, man, that was a great interview.
Oh yeah, no, I really enjoyed that. It was also just interesting to hear, you know, I'm not a musical artist. You are. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can play the piano, but I don't consider myself a musical artist.
You play piano?
I shouldn't have said that.
Oh, that's breaking news. Come on, man. You play piano?
Ode to Joy. I probably can still play Ode to Joy. But to hear from another artist, his perspective, kind of also his take on other artists or other protests or message music that, you know, I affiliate with, it was really interesting to hear his take on that. And also what has inspired him over the ages.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to ask you before we go. Is there any particular hot protest songs out there with Kendrick Lamar, anything that you're listening to that you would recommend me check out?
Nah, I mean, like, that was the thing I was looking at. I mean, Kendrick Lamar, the song was...
I know he's got the We Gonna Be Alright. That's the one that Black Lives Matter has been playing.
Well, there's been a bunch of his over the last couple of years. I mean, so it's been interesting for me to also think, like, some of those songs I enjoy, but, like, I look back at, like, say, quote-unquote protest songs from the 70s, right? It was such a different vibe. Like, I can't rap like Kendrick Lamar. I can sing along to some folk songs.
Right.
So I also think that's interesting to think about, like, you know, in terms of how it gets spread. So, yeah, I mean, I think those are the ones that come up as much now. I mean, I'm not the expert on modern day hip hop that I probably was 10 years
ago. Well, look, I'll recommend it. I'll beat the beating drum or dead horse, whatever you call it. But I'd say the Temptations, man, you got to check out their social justice catalog. It's so rich. It's so powerful. And again, I think that they were the catalyst for moving Motown to the left, as people say it now, you know, from the center to the left. Yeah. I think they were definitely doing that. So
Sly and the Family Stone, always got to listen to that too.
Message music?
Some songs.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you got to tell me a particular song. I'll check it out. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening for this conversation about music, black music, and particularly in the link to social justice. There's, of course, great episodes that we've already done on Pushback. You can check that out on iTunes or phillymag.com/podcast or, of course, Word Radio. There's great more podcasts to come. And so for Malcolm Burley, I'm Flood the Drummer. Until next time, I'm drumming for justice.